The Team Never Quit podcast is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal has all the financial tools and resources that you need to dominate debt. Go check out NavyFederal.org for more information today.
But when I say do your best, I mean it in the sense of do it as if your fucking life was on the line. And you will have a better outcome. If you apply that, if you're a student in high school, if you're a young professional, if you're a family man, a dad, and a father, if that is your attitude, you're going to be more successful. You're going to be happier. It's simple, but that's it.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you are getting this show. So today, before we jump into our special guest, let's kick it off with our weekly Patreon question. And this week we have got, if you could add any sport into the Olympics, what would you add? I've got a few I've been thinking about.
Well, that doesn't seem fair. We just heard the question. How do you already know? I'm kidding. Go ahead.
I know.
That's a good one.
I also feel like one that you would like to add would be chess. I also think dodgeball would be super cool to watch.
That's a good one.
I know.
Nice.
I think that'd be so fun.
I have to admit, I don't know enough about the Olympic. Like, I don't know all of the Olympic sports. So I don't even know what you would need to add.
Well, one thing they don't have right now is golf.
Oh, that should be in there.
That should be in there.
At least a long drive.
Or they can just play golf.
Do you remember the old, I think, Budweiser commercials where they'd combine two sports?
Yeah.
I'm going down that avenue. I'm going to say, let's combine skydiving with bull riding. It'd be good for TV.
You have to fall on the bull.
You have to fall on the bull and scare him.
Ride the bull out. The chute is up. Yeah.
Yes.
My God, that'd be a great commercial.
Yes.
That sounds something like for the Nitro Circus Boys.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
They'd try and pull that off. Dude, the dodgeball one was good.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard question. Is jiu-jitsu in?
Nope.
That'd be good.
Jiu-jitsu.
Nope. Yeah.
And I heard they pulled wrestling out, but tell me that was, I misunderstood that and they put it back in.
I don't know.
Because I know it was actually the first sport.
Yeah.
So definitely jiu-jitsu.
Even flag football would be cool to watch.
Underwater hockey?
Yeah. Is bowling?
I don't think so.
I thought bowling was in the Olympics. I think we're too uneducated to make this call.
Call Snoop Dogg. Get Snoop on the phone and let's just ask him because he knows everything about that now. He's like the commentator for the Olympics.
I feel like you should be a commentator.
Me and Snoop?
You and Snoop, for sure.
How about NASCAR?
That would be interesting.
Some sort of racing, yeah.
All right, Motocross? That was a good question.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll just think on that one now. You got me spun up about it. All right. Well, brother, thanks for coming in, man. I love it when team guys come in. I get fired up every time we have one in here to just talk about the old times and what you're doing now. I think our fraternity, once we got out and the guys got reacclimated into society, they kind of hit the ground running. So thanks for coming in and doing this. I like to give everybody a little background, especially on the SEALs where you come from. So tell me where you were born, man.
So I grew up born and raised in Roswell, Georgia, just north of Atlanta a little bit.
Small town?
No, it's a suburb of Atlanta.
Okay.
So it's definitely not small now. I know that.
That place is growing like crazy.
Like crazy, yes.
Paint us your childhood. What was that like?
You got military in your family?
Yeah. So my dad, he's an Army Ranger, Vietnam era.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you do have it in there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
And then we'll get to Clint Bruce here in a little bit. But cousin,
I talk about that dude all day.
Right. Right. So growing up, you know, there's four kids in the family. I'm the second of four. It goes girl, boy, girl, boy. And we're about 10 years apart. So my parents always...
Are they as big as you are?
No, I am definitely the biggest.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I am the biggest. The joke is I stole... Because I got my little brother, right? There's two boys and two girls and my little brother. The joke is I stole all the nutrients out of the womb. Because...
I mean, there wasn't nothing left.
Yeah, he could be like a coxswain almost, you
is
know?
Is your dad big?
He's about average, 5'10", 5'11", you know, 200...
Normal height for special forces guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty average, right? Yeah. So growing up, my parents, they just encouraged the kids to find what they're interested in and, you know, to be productive and to live a productive, rewarding life. And that was kind of it, you know. The way I sum it up now is the more you can overlap what you're interested in with what you're good at, with what someone will pay you to do, the more successful you will be. So over the, I guess now I could say decades, I've kind of refined that message from my parents, and that's how I pass it on to our kids. We have three under five, keep in mind.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's busy work right there, man.
It is a blessing. But that was the environment that we grew up in. My parents encouraged us to be participate in sports and ECAs, and to take the hardest academic, you know, APs and whatnot in high school, you know, all the way coming up, they encouraged education for sure. But specific to my dad and his time in the military, it was never anything not talked about. And I think a lot of our Vietnam era veterans, it's just like a black hole in their resume. They don't want to talk about it.
Nothing.
Because, and I get it, they were treated like dog shit.
Yeah.
And, but in our family, it was known, it was talked about. It was never like us joining the military. It was never encouraged and it was also never discouraged.
Check.
It was very neutral. And, you know, I call it a blessing, but because at a very early age, I knew what I wanted to do when I grew up.
Yeah.
I knew that I wanted to be a Navy SEAL. And I remember growing up, I had this cool, like you probably had the same one, Marine poster in your room with the guy just with the face paint on.
That's it, yeah.
I mean, their marketing still is great. Phenomenal.
The Marines do a phenomenal job.
They do a great job.
Every Marine has that square jaw, you know, when they got their cap on and all that stuff. They all look they do. They got the best. They do.
They do.
How did you know you wanted to be a SEAL, though? Was there a movie or a book you read?
There was no specific incident, conversation, experience, person. I just, you know, my dad, I would ask him stories about Vietnam. He would tell me. He wouldn't, you know, glamorize him by any means, but he would tell me his opinion. And I loved the water. I just had this love for the water at an early age. And I just wanted to be a frogman. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
So then growing up, the closest thing that I knew to a Navy SEAL was Clint Bruce, okay, who's my cousin, 7 or 8 years older than me. And at the time, I was...
Y'all are cousins.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You damn near could be some brothers.
What's that?
You could be brothers.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, y'all look similar.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm in middle school. Clint's the closest thing that I know to a Navy SEAL, and he's just a midshipman at the Naval Academy. So, you know, but I base decisions off of these. So in middle school, I started doing research on, well, this is the path to become a Navy SEAL. It's the only path that I knew. So what do I need to do to go to the Naval Academy? So I ended up going to what they would call a STEM high school now. Back then, they called it a magnet high school. So it was not my district. You know, it was out of district.
Oh,
so,
check. I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a burden. You know, it was not as easy as waking up, getting on the school bus.
Right.
You know, there's just more logistics. But I am a boy pursuing a goal. Okay, not harboring a dream. I'm pursuing a goal, and there's a difference. So I went to this, you know, STEM high school, took the hardest classes that I could in preparation for the Naval Academy. And and while I was in high school, Clint got orders and became a SEAL. So all of my, you know, thought process up until that point Well, it's proving to be true and accurate. So at that point, I just stay the course. I applied to the Naval Academy, and I got a little letter back from them. And a little letter, when you're applying to colleges, is usually bad news. And it was bad news. I did not get accepted to the Naval Academy. And I was destroyed.
And you had the congressional approval and all that?
I had, yeah. So I went through, I did the whole gambit? Yeah, absolutely. It was Newt Gingrich, then Speaker of the House, who was my congressman.
You didn't tell him you were Clint's cousin, because that might have done it.
That might have. Yeah, I think I left that part out.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I'm Clint Bruce's cousin. We're definitely not letting your ass hear it in.
But the very next weekend, I got a large envelope from the Naval Academy Foundation. And I remember I was driving home from the SAT, and I called my mom, and my mom said, "Hey, you got this big envelope from the Naval Academy Foundation. Do you want me to open it?" I said, "No, but I'll be home very soon. We're going to open it together." So I did, and then it was presented that I had the opportunity to attend a foundation school, which is a prep school, right? A preparatory school. So did that, went to a prep school in New Mexico Military Institute. So I moved from Roswell, Georgia to Roswell, New Mexico.
Oh my gosh, how funny.
Is that where that's at?
Yes. Huh. About, you could see Ruidoso in the landscape, about an hour drive away.
That's out there.
It's out there. No distractions. Good for an aspiring Naval Academy midshipman.
Isn't Roswell where they have like the aliens statues and all that kind of stuff? Okay.
That's where all the aliens land. They like it there.
Yeah.
Because it's out in the middle of nowhere.
Drove through there. Yes. In high school, we did a road trip and we drove through there.
Yeah, it's definitely worth visiting.
Do you remember the comedian? I guess he's still a comedian, Tom Green.
Of course. Yeah. He got a new show coming out.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. I do remember that.
I saw Drew Barrymore.
Yes. So when the weekend I was getting dropped off by my parents to matriculate at NEME, Tom Green, I guess he had just done his show where he brought in like a fake dead alien into the UFO museum on a gurney. Now, these people take it very serious. They did not appreciate his sense of humor
very
at all.
Serious.
Very serious. Very serious. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's out there. Hilarious.
He comes in with the cameras and the lights, and they're pretty ticked off. So anyways, that was the weekend that I was matriculating, and I ran into Tom Green at one of the diners, and I said hi into him. I was just, you know, another fan, just like, "Man, get away from me. I want to eat my food." So I kept it quick. I was like, "Hey, Tom, I really like your stuff. I just want to say hi."
God, that guy would make me laugh so hard. Road trip.
Yes. Yeah, that's the man. Movie. Yeah.
So how long do you have to do the school in New Mexico?
1 year.
1 year.
Yeah. So it's kind of like Clint went to NAPS, Naval Academy Prep School. Yeah. So it's kind of like that. I guess the athletic equivalent would be like a redshirt year.
Mm-hmm. Schools have Boost. There's some school, like it's a program called Boost and stuff like that.
Right.
Okay, then what?
Yeah, so I needed to beef up my SAT or ACT score. So I ended up between high school, junior year, senior year, and this year at prep school, I took the SAT over 15 times.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Dude. I was determined, and at prep school
they had to have seen that.
Yeah. Yeah. They do. And it's also at the prep schools, you don't have a choice. You're there on their dime, you're going to follow their program. So they see
they sent you.
They sent me. Yeah, the foundation sent me. Well, that was the other interesting part about it. It was the funding of it was a third, a third, a third. So I think the Naval Academy paid for a third, the foundation paid for a third, and then my parents paid for a third. And so I'm flipping through this catalog. There's like 45 schools you can pick from. Like, you know, some of them are the preparatory schools that, like, I don't know, like the Bush kids go to, right? Like very nationally known, very expensive schools. Well, first phone call when I get this catalog is to Clint. And I'm like, "Hey, Clint, which there's a ton of, you know, options for prep school. Which one should I go to?" And Clint just says, you know, Clint, how he talks. He says, "Well, the toughest man that I know, he went to New Mexico Military Institute." I flipped to the ends. I found NEME. And I was like, "Sweet, $6,000. Third, a third, a third."
In Roswell.
In Roswell, yeah. We can afford this. We can afford this $2,000 tuition payment. So yeah. So, but to answer your question, prep school's a year.
Okay.
A year, and then from there, had a few weeks off, And then my parents dropped me off for induction day at the United States Naval Academy. And that was also the first day that I ever stepped foot at the Naval Academy on their campus.
Oh, you had never been before?
I had never been there.
Oh, wow.
I was truly, you know, in pursuit of a goal. And it didn't
matter.
Feel
good.
It didn't matter. It felt absolutely great.
How did it feel great?
It felt great. But I didn't need to go there in advance. I didn't need to visit. I knew that's where I wanted to go. And wow. I loved it. And it was a great college experience for me.
So you loved it the whole time then?
I loved all of it, yeah.
So were you considered a plebe if you went to...
Okay, 100%.
You're still considered a plebe.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no skipping that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got your head shaved and all the things hazed a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of like a year-long boot camp with a strong emphasis on academics. You know, the first, I think it's 6 weeks. The first 6 weeks is more of like your traditional boot camp experience. And then, you know, the brigade, they're out doing their summer training blocks.
Yeah.
And so everybody returns in August for the school year. And it changes. It's more like your job changes from like kind of the beatdown of indoctrination to, it's kind of a beatdown, but it's more academic driven. So, but yeah, you have to do things like... you know, memorize three meals in advance. So like so it's, you don't have to memorize three meals. It's three meals in advance. So the second you get dismissed from your meal, you have to know that third meal. So it's really like you have to know four meals, and they have these very intricate names. It's not like green beans, okay, as a menu item. It's like King Neptune's green beans from the bottom of the ocean.
Oh my gosh.
And that's just one. And so, you know, so you have to know those. You have to be able to talk about a local event, a national event, an international event. You can get quizzed on this stuff. I mean,
from the other upperclassmen, right?
Upperclassmen,
and the instructors.
Yes,
like just straight
upperclassmen.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. They kind of act as your instructors.
Right.
Yeah.
Place your own, right?
Yep. Yeah, but it's such an impressive operation. You know, we're talking about Bancroft Hall a little bit. You know, when we're chit chatting before this started, and it's, have you guys had a meal in King Hall?
No.
In the Chow Hall? If you ever get the chance to go back, have a meal there, because it's the most impressive food operation I've ever seen, literally.
Yeah, okay, so go ahead.
We actually know somebody that's helping build out the school that this guy went to in Detroit. Detroit Catholic is a prestigious Catholic high school.
Okay.
And this gentleman has now retired, and he's spending all of his philanthropic efforts to like building out Detroit Catholic even bigger. And he sent his team to the Naval Academy to look to see how they run their food operation.
It's one of the best in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So good, good place to go.
Unbelievable. Yeah. How many they feed and how often they feed.
Yeah.
And how good the food is.
Yes. I mean, they it's like an army of people coming out with meals on wheels. And they go to their assigned area, and they bring all the food out family style. They feed 4,000 people three times a day in 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 20-minute feeding for 4,000 people, and it's continuous.
And everything's fresh.
Everything is fresh, and everything is delicious.
Yeah, that was
something. Everything is so good.
They were saying, because they don't have enough like freezer space.
Yeah.
To be able to freeze things, and they don't have the time to reheat all of that. They need it like quickly done, so everything is fresh. Like, it's supposed to be one of the most impressive food operations ever. They feed 13,000 people a day.
I mean, if you count all the meals,
it would be
about 13,000.
Because it's staffed too.
Yeah, because it's 4,000 times three for breakfast, lunch, dinner for the brigade, plus staff and teachers and whatnot. So, yeah,
it's that makes insane sense.
It is.
And the town it sits in is phenomenal.
Yes.
And one of the cool things about the academy is you get a family assigned. You're assigned to a family that lives there, correct?
Correct.
Tell us about that. Like, do you like the family? How do you pick the family, or do they pick you?
They beat on you. I mean, what are we talking about?
So it's a great program, and it's designed so that you can kind of have just a home away from home, if you will. And so for the most part, it's you're kind of just randomly slotted together unless you know somebody, right? Yeah, it's a place where you can go, and typically, you know, our refrigerator is your refrigerator, so eat whatever. do your laundry. You know, a lot of the families have kids, so they like the midshipmen being around just to kind of be that good role model for the kids. Yeah.
You still talk to your family?
Yeah, I do.
All of my buddies do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you liked your family.
So again, you're initially placed with a family, and I stuck around for plebe year, and then I kind of migrated and I found a new family.
Okay.
So that's how it works for me. And yeah, I mean, they actually moved from Annapolis, Maryland to Roswell, Georgia.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, what a small world. So, but yeah, no, they're great. We still talk. It's a great program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you're in the academy, what year is it when you're like, hey, I want to be a SEAL?
Let's see. So I guess the process really starts your junior year. So there,
but everyone knows you're kind of talking about it and you're working out at a certain program, or is it just
correct?
All right.
Yeah, you start talking about it, and you know, everything leads to service selection. And then your junior year, you have like a series of mini buds evolutions. So the first screener, I guess, is like it's a weekend screener in the winter in Annapolis. And then that summer, if you're selected, which I was not, then you go to Coronado for mini buds.
For mini buds.
And then that rolls right into your senior year. And then it's service. Let's see. It's service. It's service assignment night. So the way that all the building works is, they'll get on the 1MC, the intercom system, and they'll say, will graduates ranked 1 through 50th report to Smoke Hall? And so they have literally every billet, every job available on a placard on this big wall. And so the number one graduate picks the job that he or she wants.
He or she's the only one that gets to do that?
Well, yeah. So, and that's why they call it service selection night. But for Spec War and EOD, it's service assignment night.
Okay.
So it's kind of a different process. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because you're not selecting. You are chosen.
Right.
So I was going through that pipeline. I didn't get picked up for mini buds. It was not likely that I would get a buds billet if I didn't do mini buds. And so that's what happened with me. And at that point, one of the blocks that I did between junior and senior year for summer training was a block called Leatherneck in Quantico, Virginia. And it's a month long, and you're learning Marine Corps culture, and you're doing, you know, basic tactics and kind of, you know, just basic Marine Corps stuff. And I loved it. And I was the honor graduate for my Leatherneck class. And I had a hard choice to make senior year, because I knew I wanted to be a warfighter. Keep in mind, it was my sophomore year that 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
So we knew we were going to war.
We were in it by then.
We're in. Yeah. I mean, this is 2004 when I graduated. So it's not like a peacetime selection, right? Like I know that we're going to go to the show. And for me, it was, man, the Marine Corps is a sure bet. Mm-hmm. Like I was an honor grad in my Leatherneck class. I think I'd have a spectacular career in the Marine Corps. I think I would love it. Or roll the dice and continue to follow my childhood dream of becoming a Navy SEAL. At that point, there's only one option, and it's a big risk, and that's to go to a boat.
Yeah, that's huge.
And I rolled the dice, and I went to a boat, and
where did I send you?
San Diego. Went to I went to the Bella Wood.
Oh, I know it.
Decommed her. Yeah. Any good stories?
Plenty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that boat.
Yeah.
We did a lot of stuff off of that thing. How long were you on there?
Well, I was like the decommissioning crew, basically.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So for like 9 or 10 months, and then cross decked to the Bonhomme Richard. And it was from the Bonhomme Richard to the Bonnie Dick that I got my orders to buds.
How hard is that? Because I mean, being brand new officer.
Yeah, so you can't apply until you're warfare qualified. In my case, surface warfare qualified. So,
oh, you had to get your PIN before that even happened?
I had to get my PIN before I could even drop my application. So fleet average at the time was about 22 months to get your SWO PIN. I got mine in about half that time. I was motivated. I wanted to get off the boat, and I wanted to get to buds.
Yeah. I remember talking to the guys, like, the problem is if you're so squared away, they won't let you leave. So if you're a shitbag, they won't send you.
The trick is to be somewhere in the middle.
I feel like we could blame Clint Bruce for that too.
I think so.
Did you play any sports at the Naval Academy?
I did not. I was a recruited athlete, intramurals. Everybody plays sports, but I wasn't a recruited athlete.
Yeah.
Okay, so you showed up to Buzz what class?
264. So if I may.
Yeah, tell me.
Before that. So I'm an ensign on the Bonnie Dick. I've got orders to Buds. And I've got friends in the community, okay? So I find myself at Master Chief Ed O'Brien's retirement ceremony or party at McPee's, okay?
Everybody knows who he is.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I ran into him last year at MacDill Air Force Base at the Soft Week or whatever they call it now, that conference. But so I'm at Ed's retirement ceremony, and a mutual friend, I believe it was Jason Agopsiewicz. Do you know him?
I don't know. Ego.
So it was either him.
What's his nickname?
Ego. He's a Texas boy.
Yeah.
So it had to have been either Ego or maybe John Choate.
I know who he is.
So I think Choate called me over.
I don't think Ego and I ever met. Okay. I definitely know Choate.
So he called me over and he said, "Hey, Marcus, this is Ensign Ogden. He's got orders to Buds. And by the way, he's Clint Bruce's cousin." Do you remember this?
Another hookup.
Do you remember this? Yeah, another hookup.
Another hookup.
Well, so here we are. You step up to me.
What year is this?
This would have been like 05, 06, something like that. Oh, okay. Probably 06.
So after Red Wing.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It would have been 06 because I'm trying to think the timing of this. Yeah, it was after Red Wing. So you walked up to me and kind of closed that gap a little bit, hearing that I'm an ensign, I got orders to Buzz, and I'm Clint's cousin. And you just kind of towered down and you, like, you're looking through me. You're not looking at me, you're looking through me. And you take your big meaty paw.
I was a different man back then.
And you slap my back and you say, "You're Clint Bruce's cousin?" I said, "Yes, sir." And you go, "You're going to Buzz?" "Yes, sir." And then you said, "You better graduate or I'm going to fucking murder you."
Yeah, that's definitely something I'd say.
And I was like, "All right, let's put that on the to-do list. Not get murdered by Marcus."
Gosh, dude, we were back in workup too. 06, man. That was 2005.
That's so funny.
All right, so you show up in 267?
264.
Excuse me, thank you.
264.
Is that a summer or winter?
Let's see. We 1-1 was, I think, April 1st. So it's kind of...
Yes.
Or was that the Hell Week? No. Hell Week for us started April 1st. So we started first phase in the winter.
Ugh.
Yeah.
The freaking worst, man. All right, how was Buds?
You know what? It was awesome. It was the hardest thing I've ever done, right? But also the most rewarding thing that I've ever done.
Boat Crew 1, obviously.
What's that?
Boat Crew 1 or 2.
What do you mean?
What boat crew are you in? Were you in 1 or 2?
Oh, shoot, man. The class just kind of shrinks in the accordions and all that. So, but it was awesome. It lived up to every expectation, you know, everything. Yeah, it was definitely.
What was your hardest phase?
I will say dive phase because that's when I got rolled.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, pool con whipped my ass. I was on the wall 3 times. I came through on the fourth.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a bad day for me because I failed my fourth pool comp and that's when I got rolled.
Is that what got you?
Yeah.
Dude, I get so many people.
Yeah.
No one ever talks about that. Like even when we talk to civilians, cause they just can't understand that what pool comp is and what that does to us.
Right. And people, yeah. Cause everyone knows about Hell Week. And everyone thinks that that's the hardest thing you'll ever do. But the reality is that experience just prepares you for harder situations with, you know, dysfunctioning gear that doesn't work or something's going to break or go wrong. I mean, pool comp is absolutely no joke and it doesn't get the credit that it should. But it's all just to prepare you for real world.
When they kept saying that, like, you think this sucks, you think you're cold and miserable, it's nothing compared to the teams. The team's the most miserable place. You're like, whatever.
Yeah.
And then you get in there and it is.
You're like, yeah, they weren't lying.
They weren't lying. They don't lie.
Yeah. But I'd say for me, the hardest thing was the running. Like I'm a fish in the water. But it was the running. You know, before Hell Week, I was probably top third in my class for running. After Hell Week, I was like I was bottom 10%. Like I was probably like
Clint. Goon Squad?
What's that?
Goon Squad?
I was the mark. You had to be
ahead. I was the mark too.
I was the mark.
Yeah, all right, check.
Everybody wanted to be ahead of me.
I know your life. I was there with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, same life, different times.
Man.
Yeah. That's yeah. So I was the king goon.
The king goon. Yeah,
hated that every day. I mean, and you know, because then you try to run up with everybody else and you're like, get away from me.
Get away from me.
My brother was a gazelle. I mean, he freaking haul ass. I didn't get that genetic. I'm in the water guy like you, man. Yeah. Once I got in
Marcus
there.
Marcus is a fish in the water.
Yeah, man. It was game on.
Yeah, me too.
That's so crazy. Yeah. So did you graduate 265?
Yes.
Okay. So you got rolled one.
Yeah, I got rolled, picked up a 265, finished there.
And you get along with them pretty good?
What's that?
When you rolled into 6.5, they accept you pretty good?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
You know how it is.
Yeah. Different class, different personality.
Sometimes that gets guys sometimes.
Yeah. No, it was a good transition. There's quite a few of us that rolled in as well.
Yeah.
And then for the officers, I don't know how it was when you went through, but then for the officers between BUDS and SQT,
they created
a block called JOTC.
Yeah, JOTC.
So we did JOTC, and then we essentially got rolled again for that.
Because I was 18 Delta, I got pulled off for SOT.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to go to airborne school with the class. I went with the officers. I spent my whole time with the officers.
And you went to Fort Benning, right?
Yeah, so much fun with them.
Yeah.
Because they protected me. Like, I had an Alpha on my helmet. I mean, it was kind of, I had some wild ass officers, man. They were great. All Academy dudes.
I like it.
Hell yeah, man. All right. So then where'd you go?
Team one.
No fun one.
I had a lot of fun, but yeah.
One and two are no, they're the originals. The originals. I mean, they still war over who was first.
They still what?
They still argue over who was the first SEAL team between each other because two is on the East Coast.
The time zone
is ahead of them. So they're like officially they were actually the first SEAL team. Yeah, it's like that.
First SEAL team two, but I'm an alum of SEAL team one. So
yeah, were you always at one?
Yeah, well, pretty much. So I was at one. I had the opportunity to augment Damneck while I was there, and that was towards the end of our workup. And it was a great experience for me. And
I heard that. I never got to do that. I heard it's a sweet deal.
It was awesome.
All the guys I talked to loved that.
Yeah, it was great. And I the irony is I didn't know at the time how it would prepare me for what was about to happen, which I was there for, I want to say, about 6 weeks augmenting. And then we all, there's like, I don't know, 15 of us or so from team one. We all went back. And then we were one of the two platoons going to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And so I was on, we went out on three trucks and I was going out on the third truck because they're spaced a week apart, for the turnover portion. And, my platoon commander, Dan Knossen, we high fived in the parking lot and then he was on an airplane
we never met, but I know he was a great guy. All the guys talked about him.
Yeah.
And the way that we keep his memory alive.
Well, so we high-fived in the parking lot, and before a week had even passed, we got word that somebody got blown up, and it was a very catastrophic injury. And not too long after that, find out it's Dan, who got blown off. He ended up, so he lost both his legs above the knees, and I called my task unit commander. And I said, hey, sir, I know I'm supposed to be on the third truck, but can I fly out on the next plane? And so I went and assumed the platoon commander position for about the first 3 or 4 months, which was a weird thing because I was 2IC as a new guy because I was a lat transfer. But those 6 weeks that I spent with Damneck, I didn't know how much that would prepare me to be the platoon commander. Now we had some guys, our platoon had some guys doing the RAT mission in Iraq. And so the third IC, Rob Reich, who was a Mustang. So they eventually brought him back and then he got his platoon commander credit for that platoon. So
Oh, really?
Yeah. It technically didn't count against me.
Oh, you got lucky.
I did. But then I got unlucky.
Okay, let's hear it.
Unit 3.
Okay. Immediately after that?
Yep.
What's that mean?
It's a support element. Unit 3 is out of Manama, Bahrain, attached to 5th Fleet headquarters. And it's just a support unit. We're doing a lot of JSATs.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Did you get a mansion out in town?
I had a nice place out in town.
You got a mansion out in town then.
Yeah, I had a nice place.
Yeah, they're nice.
Yeah.
That was the one perk.
Yeah.
When we got to come hang out with y'all.
Yeah.
Whoever got stuck out there, because that sucked.
Yes.
But the houses y'all would get hooked up with, and then, oh, okay.
Yeah. So there was that.
Yeah. I remember that.
There was that. And so, yeah, so what we were basically facilitating JSATs is what our job was. And, you know, I was pretty angry.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I was devastated because I thought that I earned my place to stay at one and deploy again and do the work up and deploy. But the Navy is a big business, and SEAL Team 1 had to pay what's called a junior officer tax.
Hmm.
And it had to be for my year group. And there were 3 guys that it could have been. And both the other guys were married. One of them had kids.
Oh, that's how you got stuck there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's exactly how that works.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about Dan, just so we can honor him?
Yeah. So Dan's done a terrific job representing the community today.
Okay.
As an Olympic athlete, but with Dan, I'll never forget. As a part of, let me start over. We were working up. We were doing urban combat. And we were basically stuck inside this training building, getting just contacted from all sides. And he was in charge of one side of the room, and I was in charge of the other side. And I was yelling people, and yelling at people and barking things and orders. And Dan just walked up to me nonchalantly. He said, "Jared, calmness is contagious. Just talk." And I'll never forget that. Absolutely. And he's so right. And I carried that lesson forward, in Afghanistan. But what had happened was, first turnover op between us and 7, Dan stepped on a pressure plate. And so that's what caused the explosion. Honestly, he should have died that day. But there's a tremendous effort, you know, between the tourniquets and getting him.
Got him high, off, right?
What's that?
If I remember correctly, it got him high, right?
Yeah, yeah. Double AK, double above knee. Yeah. Eric Skalski was one of the guys on the litter. He got the Silver Star for carrying him down off that mountain to where he could be picked up. But we didn't know for many months if Dan was going to be, if he was out of the woods or not. And so it was great to see Dan, you know, when we landed 7 months later, back at North Island. You know, he was out there. He had just been issued. I don't even think his legs had joints in them. I think they're just peg legs. Because, you know, that whole thing is a process of learning how to walk again. So you start with peg legs before you can get.
Yeah, they got to build up the calluses in there. Because in the all those guys, that's the tough part. Because of the bleeding and everything and the infections that go along with that.
And he's an Olympic athlete now?
Yeah. So biathlon.
Oh, wow.
And actually, when I was at Unit 3, I took my R&R and I went to go and watch him compete. It wasn't like an Olympic year. It was one of the off years. But I got to stay with the team and spend some time with him and watch him do the sit-ski shoot.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's won a bunch of gold medals. I mean, he's really – he went on to Harvard, you know, got a degree from Harvard. He's also an academy guy.
But, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, that deployment was very kinetic, and I was very angry that I had to go to Unit 3. But at the end of the day, what can you do, right? So I went to Unit 3, and we were doing JSATs, and you're close enough to the fight, but you're not there, you know. And on occasion, we would support actual operations that I can't talk about. But it was 99% JSET stuff.
Yeah.
And I just didn't like the mission. I was in a bad place mentally, and I punched out after that.
Probably when you got back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So was that 5 years?
I was in eight.
Yeah, I was going to say it's seven or eight, right?
Yeah, 8 years. Yeah. Or I guess a few months short of eight. So.
Then where'd you go?
Then I was one of the guys that helped stand up a Fortune 50 CEO's executive protection program.
What's that transition like?
It was fun. It was new. It was exciting, you know, to be on the beginning of this transition from the military to business and to have daily interaction with a titan of business. It was incredibly insightful to travel the world with him and to kind of have access to someone that successful, with how, you know, he sees the business world and whatnot. And then you're working with guys cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
And this was a SEAL only detail. So the transition was pretty good.
It makes it pretty easy for us.
Right. Yeah. But I guess the novelty wears off at a certain point, and it was time for me to move on, even though I was making great money. But it's 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So basically 6 months of vacation a year. Now, if I had sense back then, that's when I would have gotten my MBA. That's when I should have gotten my MBA. I had plenty of time, plenty of money. But I didn't. But it was a great way to start that transition, working with guys, you know, other frogs, and learning from truly one of the most remarkable businessmen living today.
Can you say who it is?
Steve Wynn.
Oh, nice.
Dude, yeah. Great family.
Yeah.
I hear every time I go up there, over there, nothing, everyone has, let's say they're the best.
Yeah.
The way they, the whole company.
Yeah.
I mean, from the maid staff on everybody, the drivers.
Yeah.
It's all here. How squared away that dude is.
He runs a very squared away organization.
Fuck, man.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for you, man.
And almost like, there was one night where an employee had triggered a fire alarm, and it was almost like seeing a non-judicial punishment hearing, right? Because we like, it caused a commotion on the property. And so the entire chain of command reports to his villa. And then everybody kind of has a chance to tell their version of the story. And then a decision is made very swiftly.
That's how families do it.
Yeah. Very, very militaristic.
Yeah.
Right? So.
That's probably why it runs so smooth.
Yeah, it runs. It does run smooth. That is a fact.
I've heard a couple of our guys that run through his programs. One buddy of mine, he goes, man, I went over there to work for them. And he started me in the cleaning service. And I did each job for a little while. Until I left out of there.
Yeah.
He goes, I learned so much. Learned how to stay humble, too.
Yeah.
He goes, definitely learned that. Team guys have a tendency to beat on our chest a little bit. Mm-hmm. He goes, when you get out, it's good to go back into buds, so to speak.
Yeah, go back to basics.
Basics, yeah. All right.
So cool.
Then what?
So also during this same, I call it kind of a three-year period of my resume. So I did that. And then this was crazy. I was taking a group of wounded Marines from Balboa to drive a chase vehicle in the Baja 500.
Oh, cool.
Just kind of like an R&R kind of trip for those guys. And it was my buddy, it was his race team, and he needed help. And it just, everything made sense. And these guys wanted to get out of the hospital. And so we're out there doing pre-runs for the week leading up to the race. And I get a, you know, in TAPS, they tell you set up LinkedIn. So we're halfway through the week and I get this notification that somebody emailed me on LinkedIn. I'm like, sweet, this works. You know, I don't really know what LinkedIn is. Yeah, I didn't at the time.
Right.
And so I get an email and the email reads, Dear Jared, my name is Kevin and I'm a producer with National Geographic Channel. We think that you'd be a great participant on this survival adventure race. If you are interested, please contact me immediately. Signed, you know, fancy signature block, all that stuff. And so I get up and I just read the email and I start laughing. And I wake up, the guy I'm sharing the hotel room with, Blake. And he's like, Ogden, the fuck is so funny? Now, the night before, we probably had 13 margaritas each. And it was, you know, probably 7 a.m. And he's like, what are you waking me up for? And I'm like, come over here and read this email. And I thought that it was a mutual friend, team guy named Keone. I thought it was Keone emailing me, you know, setting me up to call this number. Because then one, he would have got me on the prank. And then two, he would have double got me because I'd be paying international fees for that phone call. So so Blake gets up, he reads the email, and he goes, Ogden, I don't think it's a prank. That's not Keone, man. I was like, how do you figure that? And he goes, well, one, Keone's too lazy to like write this email.
Yeah, but he
can't spell that good. Right. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Yeah. So call the number. Sure enough, it's a Nat Geo guy looking for, you know, people for this television show. And so what had happened was they had all the teams slotted, and one of the teams was Team Military. And something happened to one of the guys, and he had to bow out. Keep in mind, this is Wednesday. Production starts on Saturday. What? And these productions are... I the number like $40,000 to $50,000 a day, like that's what the production cost is. So they want to find the new, you know, I'll air quote it, talent. They want to find that replacement ASAP, so they're not burning, you know, $40,000 or $50,000 a day.
Right.
So he's got my curiosity. You know, I'm definitely interested in this opportunity, and you know, kind of jump through some hoops, and they want to do a VTC, like a video teleconference on Zoom or whatever, to make sure I am who I, you know, who my Facebook thing says I am and all that. But it was before that I asked Kevin, I said, how did you ever find me to begin with? And he goes, well, I saw the graduation speech that you posted on YouTube. I said, Kevin, I hate to break it to you, but I'm not on YouTube and I've never done a graduation speech. And unbeknownst to me at the time, I did do a speech, which I can understand why he thought it was a graduation speech for Senator Johnny Isaacson, who took Newt Gingrich's congressional spot after he retired. So my nomination to the Naval Academy is actually from Congressman Johnny Isaacson, who at the time of the speech was a senator, if that makes sense. So I do this speech at Academy Day. It's a statewide Georgia program. All the kids that are interested in any service academy, once a year, they do this at Dobbins Air Force Base. So I was one of the keynote speakers, and his staff put that video on YouTube. I didn't know that. So that caused the confusion. But that's how he discovered me. And I think it's a great story because, you know, Johnny has since passed away a few years ago. But I really respected him as a person and as a politician. And he always wanted me to come and speak at this event. But when I was active duty, I never could. So the first opportunity when I was separated, I not only spoke at it, but I flew out from San Diego back to Georgia on my own dime and didn't ask for reimbursement. None of that. Just wanted to help the next generation, right? And so on and so forth. So I like the story because it's just do the right thing. And in that case, the right thing landed me this spot on this television show, which I ended up doing for 2 seasons, which landed a 6-SKU knife deal with Camillus Knives. And it's just do the right thing. And
that's a God hookup.
That's yeah.
Yeah. Pays off.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
So that's kind of, those 3 years, that's, you know, got the EP, got the TV show, and that's also when I started my company. What
I'm
doing now.
You have fun doing that?
What's that?
The TV show?
Say again?
Did you have fun doing it?
I did. I loved it. It was production was about 3 months. So to make one TV season took about 3 months of being in the field, and to make one TV hour took about a week.
Yeah.
So the way that it would work, you know, in TV land, they want consistency and continuity. So, like, I think every race in TV land was 60 hours. But actually making them, some of the races were 48 hours. Some of them were 96 hours, if that makes sense.
Did you win?
We got second place both times.
Nice.
And Clint reminds me of that every time I see him.
He will.
He does.
He does that.
He does. He says, I've brought the family shame.
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 I see him calling you in the middle of the night just saying that word.
He probably has.
That's what he does.
Yeah. Second place both times.
That's a great guy, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. So what year is this now?
Let's see. It would have been 13, 14.
Okay. Then where'd you go after that?
So at the same time, I was starting my business.
All right, let's talk about that.
So I've got all these experiences from the military and from combat. And now during this kind of 3-year period, I've also trained with U.S. law enforcement. And I've just recognized there are huge differences in the, you know, the methods and how we train as SEALs versus law enforcement. And I know there's better ways to do it. Let me go back, because the company was actually conceived in Afghanistan in 2010. And I'll explain. Towards the end of that deployment, our mission had shifted from assaults to FID. And we got...
Yeah, it was a VSO or a village. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had to stay. Some guys had to be there for a year.
Right.
And 10 was a bad year for us.
Right.
Everybody had a lot of casualties during that year. 05 and 10.
Yeah.
Extortion happened in 10.
Yeah. So we were out at FOB Nabahar, which was in the middle of nowhere. And about a week had passed from when Army SF left FOB Nabahar and we arrived and picked up that mission.
Are they the ones that set that up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're, I'm talking to the captain, the Army captain, and kind of figuring out, you know, the training regimen and who's who and all that kind of stuff. And there's a Connex box, he tells me, on the range with all the training consumables that you would need to professionalize a military. And for the listeners, if you don't know what FID is, Foreign Internal Defense, it's professionalizing host nation forces, in a military and law enforcement sense, so that one day they can do that job unilaterally. That's what FIT is. So
that's a Green Beret specialty.
Yes. It's a subset of what we do.
That's right.
But we got tasked with it. So we get out there, and during that week after the Army left and we arrived, the Connex box somehow was mysteriously emptied. There was nothing in it. So we get there, set up comms, set up security. We're rolling out that night, and this is a point in the war where for every 5 of us, we have to take one of them.
Yeah.
So we got to figure out who are we going to take. Problem is, there's no targets. There's nothing to shoot. So we take water bottles, piss in them, put them on a fence, and the first handful of guys, commandos, that could shoot those from 50 yards or whatever we set the distance at, those are the guys that rolled with us. So, I say that I want to paint that picture. That was a pivotal experience that I think led to making this company Triumph Systems that makes targets and shooting systems. So what I did,
it started from piss bottles.
It started with piss bottles. Correct. All good things.
All good things
start with piss bottles.
Oh my gosh.
So the problem is, you know, I'm a warfighter. I'm not an engineer, but along the journey, I met some guys that are product engineers and designers. And so we teamed up and we unrolled the initial product offering was very unique, very fun. There were two lines of the business, kind of a recreational retail division and a government division. And the retail items were just fun, oozing, bleeding targets. And the government side was a portable, easy to set up turning target system. One side's a threat, the other side's a no threat. So that's what I've been doing for the past 10 years. Started Triumph Systems and making targets and making people more proficient with their firearms and allowing them to have more fun on the range.
That's an important thing that you said. A lot of guys have great ideas. They don't have the function to get that thing built. There are people that are out there that can build stuff that don't have the idea.
Yeah.
It's like God separated us like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you have those ideas, if you find an engineer to put that together, man.
Marcus has all the ideas. He could be your idea man.
I've
team guys, man, we just sit around school. There's nothing to do, man. They just come up with stuff to break the stuff down that we already have. Like, hey, man, I think I learned more about that when I was over with the Green Berets at 18 Delta for the medical stuff, like the tourniquets and how to expedite everything to make it faster and simplify it.
Yeah. Seconds count.
Seconds count, man. And ounces or pounds, that whole thing.
Yep. Well, I've got a few repetitions of product development now, so we can talk afterwards with some of your concepts.
Okay, so tell us about what you brought.
Okay. Well, what you have next to you, that's actually, we've had a version of that for the past 10 years. I mean, that was in our initial product offering. This is a Threat Down Yeti. When you shoot it, you get visual feedback. Each one of those pods has a water-soluble, biodegradable colored gel.
So what gave you this? This is all piss bottle stimulated?
Basically.
It's a great idea.
Thank you. You see the little jelly packets?
Yeah, I got that.
Okay, so it's kind of like that, right? Except instead of jelly, I mean, it's the same. It's a similar manufacturing process, right? You take your plastic trays, you fill them up with the right amount of colored gel, and then you seal them just like you'd seal the Smucker's jelly, and then you glue it to a print. That's all it is. Gen 1 of that did different prints, but it didn't fold. And so I quickly learned,
oh, yeah,
this is cost prohibitive for shipping. It's also a big problem with the retailers, because when they look at their retail stores, they're not looking at things in terms of, like, you know, a square foot. They're measuring things in terms of how much money I'm going to make on a square inch.
Mm-hmm.
So by folding it in thirds, I can ship it cheaper, and it also displays better on the retailers that measure those things.
Will a BB bust this?
Yeah, BB will.
So what are you typically shooting? Like, what kind of gun are you shooting with this?
I mean, I usually roll with my 9mm.
Okay.
But yeah, now that my oldest is going to be 5 in a week, we'll probably get the Daisy BB guns out. And
have you been to an airsoft store lately?
They're different, aren't they? You can spend some money. You can spend some money
there.
We just
spent over $600 on our nephews.
We got a warehouse down the road from here.
Yeah.
When you walk into there, it looks like an SF armory and a SEAL armory and everything. Every gun system you can imagine that's on this planet, they got it in there for airsoft. I'm talking all the way down to
that's
the
cool
gold-plated Desert Eagle 50 cal drug dealer
nice
thing.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. They definitely make some cool replicas. I mean, of, like you said, everything. Anything you can imagine. Anything that's ever been made.
They had a damn minigun in there.
Yeah.
And it had some weight on it.
Yeah.
So what are you sticking that target on? Like your yard sign kind of
metal? You could do that.
Things,
yeah, you could do that. Or like I see a lot of like Tyvek backings.
Okay.
Yeah, just staple it up. Or plywood. I see a lot of the plywood. Just staple it to that.
So let me ask you a question. Do you have this stuff on a t-shirt or like a body vest that you could wear? Like we could run around and shoot each other?
So we have that. That's in our product pipeline. We've never brought it to market. Oh, but I'm thinking like blue on blue, right?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, yes.
That's where it gets fun, right there.
It's easy. I mean, we know how to manufacture it. You know, we need to have a solution in the rag trade, with, you know, a t-shirt with hook and loop, aka Velcro, that just for ease of placing the paint pods on the individual. But yeah, though if there's a demand, we can.
Because that's game changer in the field out there when you're playing.
Yeah.
It's like because of the paintball.
Well, you can't lie.
You can't lie.
If you're bleeding.
That's right.
Yeah.
So what other things do you have? You have that one, and you were saying you had a software or something?
Yeah. Okay. So the initial product offering, like fun kind of targets like that. And we've got the intellectual property, you know, utility patents and all that stuff. So you can't get it anywhere but from us. On the government side, we have a turning target system. It's awesome. It sets up, breaks down in a few minutes. It weighs like 17 pounds. It works with the RF line of sight remote control, and it just turns threat, no threat. You have a remote, and you control when and which way it turns, or there's like automatic or random turning modes as well. But fast forward over the years, the most, I guess, innovative new product that we've launched is a software called Brass App. And so what Brass App does in its current state, and by the way, it's free to download and it's free to use, it automates the scoring process of both dry fire and live fire shooting drills in terms of speed and accuracy. So, you know, it uses laser technology, kind of like Strike Man, if you've heard of those guys. So that the dry fire feature probably most closely resembles that software solution. We've got bells and whistles of ours. I think we have a better mousetrap. I know we're certainly a price leader with it. But what no one else is doing is we have a live fire version of that. So say you set up a drill, live fire drill, 10 feet, three shots as quickly as you can on a 10-inch bullseye. So I'm using Brass App. I get set up. I hit start. And when it buzzes, just like a shot timer, I got my three shots. Well, it timestamps each one of those shots. So now I have my splits. And then I go up and I scan the actual target, and it sees my bullet holes. So it outputs those metrics, right? Speed and accuracy. But yeah. I argue that if you want to complete the triad of metrics that matter with anything shooting related, speed and accuracy are two of them. But to complete the triad, you need decision-making. So where we're
going... Whole time, speed, and distance thing right there, right?
Yeah. Where we're going with this is we're going to blend, we're going to integrate the live fire feature that hears your gunshots with the turning target system.
Oh, yeah.
And so when the target turns, your time starts. So you also have a reaction time aspect, but it knows which way it turns. Mm-hmm. So if the software knows it presented a no threat to the trainee, the cop, the whatever, and it registers a gunshot on a no threat.
Oh, you just added a fourth variable there into your time, speed, and distance decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And that completes the triad. So that's where we're going with this. It's decision making is it's one of the most important metrics of people that carry firearms professionally, but it's so often overlooked because there's not really.
Oh, it's huge. That's the one thing that comes into play when it's real.
Mm-hmm. I know. So, but there's not a cost effective solution.
Not yet.
Until now.
Yeah. Right now.
Yeah.
So how are you getting this out? Are you selling it at like gun stores or?
Yeah. Great question. We've got, we're online, but we're also in a bunch of big stores. We're in Big Five. You probably remember them from San Diego. We're in like all of them, I think.
Did you go to SHOT?
Yeah. Yeah, we go to SHOT Show. We're going to the NRA annual meeting in a couple weeks.
Oh, good, good, good.
We're doing a trial with Academy Sports.
That's perfect.
That's huge. Midway USA.
Good.
And then, if you like to shoot guns and you're watching this, check out our targets. If you have a dealer where you go and buy targets, tell them that we just entered a big distribution deal with Sports South. They're the largest firearm distributor in the United States. If you're a gun dealer, you probably do business with Sports South. So that completely lowers like the free freight, like the stuff that the dealers think about mm-hmm. and are important to them. They've got all our stuff in their warehouse.
Wow.
So you can buy it from them and get your free freight and all that. But yeah, we're at the big trade shows and we're in a bunch of the stores that you know, and we have a website too. So
that is so cool.
Good for you, bro.
It's been a journey, and let me tell you, I quickly learned, I started this business speaking military. I'm dealing with people that speak business.
Oh yeah, yeah, check.
Two different languages.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had to figure out how to merge that. You know, how to close that gap as quickly as possible.
That's different language, all right. Almost different type of human.
Completely different. Completely different. So I decided to go back and get my MBA, and I have no regret doing that.
I've never heard anybody say that they did.
Yeah.
Good for you. Did you do it through the Honor Foundation or anything like that?
So I think half of mine was paid for through, I guess, the GI Bill.
Your GI Bill, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then I paid the other half.
Okay. There's a foundation that's, I think, all Special Forces veterans, but Asiel started it, called the Honor Foundation, okay. And they'll help you get your MBA.
Well, I wish I had known about that about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago.
Yeah. That's
so
awesome.
We got guys in everything.
I know.
I mean, everywhere and everything.
Including the International Space Station.
Yeah.
How about that?
I know.
That's so cool.
So proud of him, man.
Yeah.
We got a few of them now.
Yep.
So Marcus has this, I'm not going to say a dream, it's a goal, because he's going to achieve it. 2028, he wants to have a full reunion of all the guys from all coasts. Actually, he wanted to do it at Big Cedar in Missouri.
Okay.
We're
nice
still
central location.
Yeah, yeah. So trying to figure out a central location. Yeah, we're trying to figure out where we're going to do it, but 2028. And
we're doing it on 28 because it's a leap year and frogs leap.
Okay.
You know, everything bringing down for team guys so they can remember it. And I don't want to do it every year, every 4 years, because people won't show up.
Yeah.
If you do it every 10, guys will die.
Yeah.
So put it like in a, on the 8th. And then one time, at least once, if you've had that trident pinned on your chest, your ass better show up. And then I was going to do the whole swim buddy rule. Like, you get an invitation, you got to show up with somebody.
Okay.
And go find them.
I like it.
Yeah.
And then just to find out.
So we can
check
build.
On our guys. Yeah. Like, what do you do? Who are my lawyers? Who are my doctors? Yeah. Who are my businessmen?
That's a huge network that's not organized at all.
Dude, we got horsemen. I mean, yeah. We got horse farms. We got biker gang. I need everybody. Just to get eyes on everybody.
Network.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's a spreadsheet, doesn't have to be anything fancy. Nothing to make money off of or whatever, but just to have this network.
Yeah.
Like, almost all universities have it. I know A&M has like an alumni thing.
There's no reason we shouldn't have that. And then I also wanted, this is like just in my thought process, but I want to have a book in every guy's room. And then for one page, I want your most wisdom, team guy wisdom. And then I want to take each page of that and throw it into one book and put it at the compound.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea. I will show up. And you know, if you do it at Cedar Lake or wherever,
I'd love to do it there.
Big Cedar.
There's four SEALs in St. Louis. I'll bring them all.
Very nice.
I was like, man, I know there may not be enough rooms, but man, guys will throw up tents.
Yeah.
You know, trailers. RVs, tents. It doesn't matter. Like, guys just show up, have a good time.
Yeah.
I really want to get that done.
So speaking of, what are your words of wisdom?
The one common ingredient that I have for everything that I've done in my life is to do your best, by which I mean my visualization of this is I'm in a fucking room and I got to fight myself out and I'm in that corner. I put myself in the corner on purpose because I can't go left. I can't go right. I got to go forward and it's going to be a fight. And if that is your attitude, because like I could say do your best and different people are going to have different things, like a different interpretation of that. But when I say do your best, I mean it. In the sense of do it as if your fucking life was on the line and you will have a better outcome. If you apply that to if you're a student in high school, you know, if you're a young professional, if you're a family man, a dad and a father, if that is your attitude, you're going to be more successful. You're going to be happier. It's simple, but that's it.
I like it.
That's good.
That's a good way to envision it.
So how do people find you, follow you, log into this, and get the targets?
Triumph-systems.com is the website. Brassapp.io is for the software stuff. And then I'm on Instagram and X and Facebook. Jared W. Ogden, I think, is my handle on that stuff.
Okay. Awesome.
We'll get all that posted out too then.
Yeah.
And I owe Hunter some cool guy picks.
Yes.
So I don't know when you're going to publish this, but.
So it will probably go up in like 2 weeks, but we probably need it at least by next week.
Okay.
And because not only is it an audio, like on iTunes and that kind of stuff, but we also have a YouTube.
Okay.
Where all the camera footage from in here, and he'll splice it in.
Cool.
So.
Yeah, I'll give you some stuff, Hunter, when I get back.
Cool. Maybe some video of using the target.
Yeah, if you got a promo reel that you advertise, we'll throw that on there.
Okay.
There's a commercial.
Yep.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, bro.
Thanks
for coming.
I had a great time. Thank you guys.
Yeah. This is
very, very warm, you know, venue that you guys have set up. So
Thank you. This
has really been great.
Thank you.
Hey, you're in Valhalla, man. Team guys are always welcome in here, man.
I love it.
Good job, brother.
All right. Thank you.